Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion featuring a variety of automotive subjects, interviews, special guests, and stories, hosted by the Round 6 Gearheads, Brian Stupski, Brad King, Alex Welsh, Eric Hibbs, and Susie Bowder. Here on Episode 7, we're talking LS-powered 12-second DeLorean time machines with documentarian Adam Contras. Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Susie.
I'm Brad.
I'm Alex.
I'm Eric.
And if you're as big of a Back to the Future fan as we are, you're in for a treat tonight. We have with us Mr. Adam Contras, who just released his documentary chronicling his quest to create the world's fastest DeLorean, and doing so with not only just a run-of-the-mill DeLorean, but a Back to the Future time machine DeLorean. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Very good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Awesome.
All good. Good, good.
Happy and hungry.
Always.
Oh, of course, sure. You didn't have your 18 tacos yet today. Great.
Yeah, it's 22.
22. That's good. At least you got that new truck to haul your ass around.
I know, right? I want you to know I had a salad today, though. It was a salad with shredded beef and wrapped in a corn tortilla. Delicious.
Yeah. And this covers our usual guess what Eric ate today. anyway, moving on. As I said, our guest tonight, Adam, you have a great documentary out there right now chronicling the build of the world's fastest DeLorean.
Yes. And, well, you just gave away the entire movie. But
oh,
yes.
We should go back. Then we should say.
I'm kidding. This is called the fastest DeLorean.
That's
what people are going to presume. It's supposed to be the attempt to get the fastest DeLorean in the world. To create the fastest DeLorean in the world.
What is the fastest DeLorean in the world? Is there a fastest DeLorean?
At the beginning of the movie, the fastest DeLorean in the world had a swap of a Supra. It got a quarter mile time, 12.66. And we thought we could beat it. And we put an LS3 motor in the car and the documentary chronicles all of that. Have you guys seen this?
I watched it last night. Man, it was awesome. It was awesome.
Thank you.
As a viewer, you go along for a ride, and I tell you, it was gut-wrenching at times to watch what you were going through. I mean, being a car guy, we've all been in that place where it's like, I'm never going to get through this. I'm never going to get to where I need to go. And watching that and watching everything you went through, I tell you, man, it was riveting. I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed the movie. I hated seeing you in those positions. There was a lot of times during the movie that was pretty bad for you.
Well, it's because I'm not a car guy, or I wasn't when I started, right? And so, you know, I had the assumption that I was going to send the car off. It was going to be built. I would help a little bit here and there. And then the person who built it would race it. And I would just document it. You know, at no point did I ever think I would be involved. So I think what makes the movie work is that you have, you know, a guy who, you know, I couldn't have intended it this way, but who was thrown into a situation where he had to put stuff together. He had to race it. He had to deal with it. And it's funny watching it, you know, even at screenings and so forth. I actually forget it's me, and you start rooting for the guy. You feel awful for him.
Yeah.
Because you can tell he does not want to be there. and I still don't. I mean, I know everybody asks if I have the bug for racing and all that. And maybe if it was in a car that wasn't my entire livelihood, sure. But when every time you drive it, you think you're going to lose a couple thousand dollars because you're not going to make your event, it's not as fun.
Yeah. When it dropped a valve after you got it running, I'm like, uh-oh, this is not good. I mean, is this the way that the car – is this the route this car is going to take? Is it going to be one of those evil cars that just doesn't want to play nice?
Well, and unfortunately, and I don't know how much I'm giving away, but, you know, this is probably okay to give some of this away. Every time I would text my brother about something, even after all of our fallout, I would still try to text him. He would always go, oh, don't worry. That's just a cheap Chinese part. You can replace that really easy. And of course, my reaction would be, why the fuck, is it a cheap Chinese part? Yeah. I gave you $30,000. What are you talking about? And inevitably, I'm just replacing all this crap in the car to this day. And since the fire, obviously, there's a rebuild and there's, you know, it becomes this massive. It's a money pit, obviously. And I don't have any expertise in it. You know, I'm certainly handy, but it's all guesswork at this point.
Right on. And, you know, what was neat to me in the whole story is the fact that you've got an oddball car. I mean, not many people think DeLorean LS swap. Susie, who's here with us, Susie had up to this point what I thought was the greatest oddball LS swap car. I mean, here's somebody who's got a Rambler wagon with an LS motor in it.
That's cool. Well, there's more room in that, at least.
Exactly. Oh, I don't know.
Really? Is it?
Well, no, there's more room than a DeLorean for sure, yeah. But that's we've got it at a 100-inch wheelbase.
Okay.
So it's more roomy than it looks like, but it looks like an old Mini. I mean, it's a really small car.
Yeah, it does. It looks like an overgrown Mini.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about 6, I think it's 6 or 7 inches shorter than our first gen Camaro.
It's that
small.
No,
excuse me. Wait a minute, let me think about that, because I think it's shorter than my Porsche.
Wow.
I can't remember. We lined them up in the driveway to figure it out, because it confounds the mind. But, you know, once we put those fender flares on it, it kind of looks bigger.
Hey,
now it's wider than your dually.
But I have to say, watching the documentary, there were so many moments where I was just clenching my teeth, because we just finished this build last fall in time for the SEMA show. I don't know if you know what SEMA is.
I have looked it up.
Yes. Yeah, my car was actually in the show, which is, to car people, that's like this, you know, holy grail.
Mecca.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, you only do it once if you're not a professional builder. My teeth were literally clenching watching some of the things that were happening to you. Because
why? Tell me. See, from my perspective, please know that I am starved for expert attention when it comes to these things, because clearly I don't trust my brother's perspective much at this point, and I'm a comedian, so fuck me. And so the fact that actual car people are watching this, absolutely, I want to know, what were you like, oh, why are you doing that? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, sure, but now let me preface this by saying that every car guy has a better way to do it.
Of course.
You don't talk to car guys, and I include women in that, because obviously that's where I'm coming from. But every car guy says, I wouldn't fucking do that. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But what I would say is I certainly would not have built the motor. I would have started with a motor. I would have started either with a crate motor or one pulled from a wrecked Corvette. Or in my case, I pulled it from a wrecked truck, because it's a 6-liter and all you're getting is a 6.2.
Why? What's the difference between building yourself and getting one that was already made?
Because you know it's going to start.
Oh.
And yeah. Timeline, you know, too.
Timeline for sure. But also, when you build a motor, there's too many variables. Look at you. You blew shit up basically the second time it was driven.
Yeah, the rocker arms. Yeah,
right. That's those are variables that you have no way of controlling, unless you had it built, you know, at a really like a mast motor or a Lingenfelter motor or something that's really really
okay.
Somewhere that's known for building a high performance motor. But you know, I don't think I would have built a high performance motor like that, because all you wanted to do was just take it down the drag strip and prove it was the fastest.
Correct.
You could have taken a 6-liter or a 5.3-liter and turboed it and come out with 800-900 horsepower.
Right.
On a salvaged motor with an iron block.
Yeah, but do you have room in there for a turbo and all the intercooler plumbing and everything?
No. Sure.
Yeah, you do. They twin turbo those things with tiny little twin turbos.
Well, but
that's not hot rodding. We want two large, huge turbos.
Well, listen, that can still be done. I think what we were thinking of, and I remember talking to him about this, because first he wanted to put a Subaru in there. That was his first. The issue was that everything's backwards because the car's in the back, and we were having issues trying to figure out how the hell it's gonna, work with the transmission. And his feeling was that let's get the foundation right. You can always add turbos later if you need more horsepower. So that's still true. I could still get that horsepower if I wanted to. Could I not, or do I have to replace everything?
Well what I'm thinking is, what if you put you plumb the turbos up in those gigantic vents off of the back?
Yeah, those big speaker boxes, no doubt, man.
Now we're getting places.
Well, but you have to be able to lift that. That's the problem.
Right.
But back to your point, yeah, you could theoretically go backwards, but if you were starting with a, let's say the 5.3 that I put in the Rambler cost me $1,200.
I was going to say a little 5.3, throw a nice PCM in there, something with a good tune on it. And
I'm carbureted.
But could you run 1260s with it? That was the intent right from the beginning. Had to run at least a 1265.
Right.
Could you do that with an iron 5.3, a mild 5.3? Don't know.
That's an unknown.
I'd rather bring a gun to a knife fight.
I don't know how heavy is the DeLorean.
The DeLorean actually isn't super heavy. Probably around 3,000. So it's not.
Yeah.
It's not awful. I don't know everything with all the crap that we put on it. Honestly, it's not too much because we took the hood off. It was only 80 pounds. So. That's the thing. Is even with all the with what we did, it clearly took a few attempts and was really hard and was really close. Now I don't know if that was the power dip issue or all the other issues, but you know a 12 and a half is faster than I think people think.
12 and a half is fast.
Yeah,
that's more than respectable.
Yeah. Now that we're talking about it, 12.29 bitches. You!
And I think there's more in it. During the documentary, watching it, when you go into third gear, I could see everybody in the other lane pulling and catching you. I'm thinking there's more in that car in third gear.
Yeah.
Once you start getting the tune, I think you're going to find a lot more power in high gear.
After I went through all that, it's pretty clear if I had access to, to a dyno where I could sit there and tinker and tune and mess with, I don't have any of that, so I'm kind of stuck.
I think there's more in the car for sure. I think you will find.
Hey, Adam, here's where the car thing comes in, being your car guy. Right now, 1220s, you're going, yes. 5 years from now, you're going to hear that, you're going to go, that's bullshit. It should have been 1120s.
Right.
So I'm just telling you.
So true.
It's the case of the numbers.
But, and then also remember, this is my food truck. As I say often in the documentary, and hey, I got the record; it's done. Now I just need it to actually be able to run. Then there's the other side, which is I shouldn't be driving people in this car if it can't handle doing a drag race. You know what I'm saying? Like,
true.
I should make it safe enough that I'm not scared going down a quarter mile.
Yeah, for sure. But I think also you can get a lot more reliability out of an LS than what you're getting right now.
Did you guys have any ideas on why the power dip always happened right around the same place, no matter what? Is there any?
I think it was leaning out. I think it's either a fuel or an ignition issue.
I was really leaning at the beginning toward like an electrical issue. It just seemed like something was dropping out, whether it's voltage to, one of the injectors. Maybe you've got a coil problem, but you said you replaced the coil packs on that car, right?
Yeah, we replaced the coil packs. The only other additional information is it's a lot. There were the starter cable going to the starter. He didn't properly insulate it, and it could, if the nuts got loose, would start resting on the casing, which is obviously where you ground the starter. So I was getting a short sometimes. It eventually melted my starter cable into my battery at a gig, and barely was able to even pull that $2,000 shoot off, but we did. And the other issue was when he put the alternator on the car, he just took the plastic casing off the back, you know, where the where it spins and the, it makes the spark. He just left that off. And so there was an open spark basically on the back of my engine that was hitting my engine, which is also a ground, you know, the, it was hitting right up against the valve covers. So I don't, that can't be good. And that is also inevitably what caused the fire. Because the fuel line failed right next to the alternator that's was taken apart and wasn't properly connected. So he blew the car up. That happened afterwards, but still it's like, Jesus, there's so many problems. I don't know where to start. So who knows what it could have been.
Yeah. It was doing it consistently. I mean, that's for sure.
It was. Yeah. Except for the very last dyno that you show on the second one where the guy leaned it out. If you pause it, you can see that the dip isn't really there. It's not smooth, but it's not as pronounced as it was before. So there's something with the tuning, something. And also the fact, and this is another question I guess I would have. It's a 2003 GMC Savannah ECU. I don't know why that is, and I don't know if that means anything. It's not an LS3 ECU because of the drive-by-wire stuff or whatever, because he had to make it work with the DeLorean. So
well, that's interesting if you think about it. A Savannah probably has a smaller cam in it, a cam that really doesn't see much past 5,500 on a good day, and you're probably pushing it to, what, 6,400 on the dyno?
On the dyno, I think we finally just tried to get it to, like, 68 just to see how much further it would go, but that's a good idea.
You could very well found your problem right there.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, you think about it. You know, if a Savannah's a delivery van, they never see high RPM.
No.
So why put an ECM in there that gives you all these parameters way out in your RPM band?
Probably again, to get away from the drive-by-wire for the gas pedal and everything like that. Now, this leads a question, though. Like, and obviously, we don't get any sponsorship dollars from anyone.
Well, not with that attitude. Come on, man. Sell it up.
Well, we had another guest that kind of figured out why we don't get sponsor dollars. But it's funny. I just wonder if maybe an aftermarket ECU would help you if you want
that's
something
exactly what
from,
I'm thinking.
Like a Diablo or something like that. I mean, any one of those is going to come with a lot of great tuning options. They're all done.
They don't come cheap.
What's that?
That means I have to buy a whole wiring harness again. So that's good.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I think they probably all share a similar connector.
The harness should be fine.
As you've discussed, you might be due for a new wiring harness anyway.
I just bought a new one after fire because that's what.
Yeah.
We bought it the first time, then I had a fire, had to buy it again, put it all back together. Now it's like, well, that ECU isn't good. Buy a new wiring harness. So it just. The money, it just starts adding up. But that bothered me. It's also hardwired to say it's a 5-liter V6. Now, clearly, it isn't seeing it as a V6. I would know if only six of the cylinders were going, wouldn't I? It would be a lot more clear.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be some popping and things like that, sure.
It'd feel shaky.
A dyno would pick that up.
Yeah, it's certainly not that. But I didn't know there were aftermarket ECUs that could also handle the drive-by-wire. Would they handle that part of it?
They'd be able to.
Okay. Had no idea. That's interesting.
Drive-by-wire is only your throttle position sensor, right? That's really all that is, that when they call it drive-by-wire.
Right,
but that's why we couldn't use an LS3 ECU.
Okay.
Because it just didn't. He needed an older ECU.
So you have a cable going to your throttle body to the gas pedal? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and you just replaced that with a sniper throttle body, correct?
Mm-hmm. I did just put there. There's also that high whistle. I don't know if you noticed. You had, and it drove me crazy. And you know, trying to figure out what that was, and maybe that was an issue, etc. And it was just the throttle was 102 millimeters and the intake was 92. So I just got a 92, the Holley Sniper throttle and put that in there. And the whistle went away. So, yay, that's good. That just annoyed me.
That'd be about a leak, too.
Yeah, I didn't understand why that. I mean, I literally 3 days ago just found this out. Actually, right when Brian called me, I was looking at them going, wait, why the hell did he have the wrong sized throttle to the. I just was like, huh? Blew my mind. I was like, that seems like an easy thing. But I didn't know. Maybe he thought that maybe that would help. But how could it help if the intake opening is only 92? What's the point of making a throttle that's 102? Right, right. It just doesn't help. It's just silly, stupid shit. Like, I shouldn't be the one figuring this out.
Trust me.
I'm so tired of all the dogs chasing.
Yeah, I mean, but goodness, I still can't believe it's that difficult. I get that he felt taxed time-wise, but that was all coming from him. I gave him all the time and money he needed. He made time promises that he couldn't keep. So I got kind of caught in the middle of that. Unbeknownst to me, you know, he had told the shop that he was at it would only take so many weeks. I didn't realize.
Yeah, but they had to make money off this deal.
Well, they didn't make anything. What happened was that he said, "Hey, I can do this," and he said, "You know, we can work on cars at our shop, so on and so forth." And I said, "Well, that's great. I can give you a bunch of press." And I went on the radio and started talking about the motorsports shop and he thought it would take about 6 weeks. I'm like, yeah, it's not gonna take 6 weeks. So I gave him like double the time, gave him double the money, ended up to be quadruple the time and triple the money. But again,
you saw receipts. They didn't make any money off this.
I was all buying part. I was literally buying the parts off eBay. And they really didn't make anything. Wow. He was doing this in his free time. And then it became pretty clear that they didn't really want the publicity, you know, because I would mention them and nobody would say anything. And it was just, it's everything felt uncomfortable. And I never spoke with the shop. I only spoke with my brother. So I didn't know what was going on. And then of course, when the whole dyno thing happened, I had to hide the motor shop. Because Jesus Christ, they're putting videos out that show them making fake dyno. Like, oh my God, man. So it just became this big, I blurred the face of the driver. Yeah. That was the owner of the shop that apparently thought that was a good idea. It doesn't make any sense because all of this was public in real time. We had a website. We were putting daily, you know, like weekly videos up about what was going on. It was being spread. So that's the part why whenever I get to that part in the movie, I want to throw something at the screen. Because it wasn't like I was tricking him into this doc, man. It was super public from the beginning. So the risk that was taken to lie is just so bizarre, especially when the power dip is not the easiest thing to figure out, you know. Like, I get it, he could have just said can't figure it out and that would have been fine. But once he gave me those videos and it's like, dude, you're in trouble, man.
Yeah, but you know, I can think of three different people in the greater Ohio area and in the Dayton and Cleveland areas that would have helped them figure that out.
Right. Oh, well, I'm sure. Listen, he's got a whole network of people that could have helped.
You get some youthful pride, I think.
Yeah, I really can't answer that. And what's funny is that is the only thing we've ever talked about since all that happened. And, you know, I didn't. He has shown interest in, you know, there's going to be a sequel and there's going to be, we're trying to actually push a reality show to do a series after this, as opposed to just another documentary. And he said he would like to, you know, at least show his side. And so I said, all right, well, let's not talk about anything. We should probably record this, you know, at least for documentary sake. And I did ask him though, why did you lie about the power dip? It wouldn't have mattered. You know, we actually had already had the horsepower record. So what, you know, and his response was he thought that, he thought I didn't know how hard it was to figure out, so he felt he had to, which is just the most bullshit thing I've ever heard in my life. But that was his reaction, which was because of me not understanding cars, he felt that he had to do that. So there's your answer. But the whole thing blows my mind because it could have been so easily remedied. I wish he'd come out. I wish he had run it. And even if it didn't work, it would have been so nice. He could have been like my brother and he was FaceTiming me on how to fix it. And he could have still been part of it. But he just disappeared, man. And you know, part of me is angry because you bet you should be lucky I had the balls to do it by myself. So at least it ended up as a good story, you know.
Yeah.
It could have been a waste of everything, you know. So I don't know. I go back and forth. It's funny. Brian knows this. It's still very raw. I still have a lot of issues with this because I still deal with the car every day, you know, and I'm still trying to get to these gigs. We had 13 events last month because of, I guess, the popularity of Ready Player One. So you got a car that won't start. You're going to lose a lot of money. You know, it's a very busy car. So
maybe we could talk about that a little, because I would love to make a living having my car show up places.
It would be great if your car could get there.
Yes.
It's a great living. It could be awesome. But it ends up now being, well, listen, it was always difficult to book a DeLorean because it's a DeLorean, you know, unless you have a winch and a flatbed, you got some issues.
It's like going with a Jaguar. Yeah, I have to buy two because one's always in the shop.
Yeah, no, like that's just what you deal with a car that old to begin with. And then, you know, it's infamous for overheating, and there's all sorts of, I mean, the car was Frankenstein together, man. The guy ran out of money and he was just kind of hoping. You know, so there was a million problems with that car. That was part of the reason why I wanted to put a new one together, basically. But yes, that what a great gig. It should be so nice and comfortable and wonderful. And the hardest part about the business is getting the business. That should be the hard part. But it's even worse when you get the business and tens of thousands of dollars are on the line. And, you know, your fuel line blows up and your car's, you know, what's funny is when that car caught fire, I was on the way to a gig and I still got to the gig.
Oh, wow.
I got a tow truck. I got it there. We pushed it. Like, I mean, I take it personally when somebody hires me because, you know, this is a shoot. They've got 20, 30 people there ready to go. They're waiting for you. Or I'll do a wedding. I'll do somebody's wedding. You know how much stress it is if you think you're going to miss somebody's freaking wedding or a kid's birthday party? Dude, this is not a hobby. It's a lot, you know? And unfortunately, I literally don't have the room to have a trailer with a winch. That would be the ideal. Because even with a flatbed, you still have to be able to start it to get it up that thing. And usually the issue is the car starting. So... it doesn't really matter if you have a flatbed.
So the car is now not working?
It is, intermittently. For some reason, sometimes when I turn the key, all the fucking electricity goes off. All the power gone. And I got to wait for a few minutes, I have a shut off to the battery, and I wait for a few minutes and turn it on, and then maybe it'll start. Okay, cool, it starts. Good. And then I get there.
Sounds like an old MG. Was it wired by? Was the guy who did the wiring? Was his name Lucas?
Oh. Now all the Back to the Future accessories that are on it, are they wired to a separate circuit that you could deselect and select? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything that's all completely separate. I have a battery just for that. I have a battery just for fog machines, and then the problem is that it's still kind of half DeLorean wire and half pre-wire. It would be great to be able to just say, all right, I'm gonna take 2 weeks and I'm just gonna take every wire out of that car and rewire the entire thing from scratch. That's what I would like to do. But you know,
no,
like,
you don't. No, that's not what you would like to do.
Well, but I mean, no, at least I would know what's wrong. At least I'd be in control of it. But the problem is I got a call yesterday that I have a gig on Saturday. It's $1,100. So what are you gonna do? You're probably just going to band-aid everything and hope. It's hard. It's hard to balance when's a good time to start ripping shit apart. So, you know, I've never missed a gig. I'm still batting 1,000, but you know, it wears on you. And it never stops being annoying because of the money you put into it. It should at least start and it should at least run. The whole stalling thing is so frustrating because I'm in stop and go traffic in Los Angeles, holding on to the parking brake, right? Holding the gas down in neutral to keep it running and trying to balance that, with stop and go traffic. It's a nightmare, you know? Yeah, it's really stressful, dude. And then you also have everybody taking pictures of you and yelling at you, hey, you're in a time machine. Like, I know, man. Can you watch the road? So, yeah, it's a nice ball of stress is what it is.
Wow. So with the release of Ready Player One, are you seeing a lot more requests for your vehicle?
Yeah, a lot. It happened when the first trailer came out and the DeLorean was in it. I went, whoa, this would be nice. Nice. And then I talked to a lot of people that read the book, and I'm like, is the DeLorean in it? They're like, it's in it for a little bit, but not enough that it would be in the trailer. And was like, oh, well, who knows? Then a Super Bowl commercial came out with the DeLorean in it. And then more trailers came out, and it became quite clear that the movie was going to really spotlight the car. And I saw it, and dude, I think it's actually in Ready Player One more than Back to the Future.
Have you seen the interviews of him?
With who? Ernest Cline? Yes.
Because he's got, like, he's a DeLorean fanatic.
Oh, yeah. Well, he bought a DeLorean after he sold the movie and everything.
He's got more than one.
Oh, I thought he just had the one that he bought.
No, I saw him on, I don't know, 60 Minutes or CBS This Morning or something. And he's got, I want to say he's got more than one.
Well, yeah, the timing is amazing because, yes, him being the dork that he is about it, and the fact that they got, it's a Warner Brothers movie, but they got Steven Spielberg, which allowed them to basically take a Universal franchise and just own it. Like, I mean, it's the craziest licensing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. I never thought about that.
And it's in it so often, as well as my co-star, Mr. Mayor Goldie Wilson. I don't know if any of you caught that, but they show his re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson poster in the movie.
That's awesome.
Like, prominently a couple times. And I went and saw it with him, and we're all giggling. I'm, like, videotaping it. Like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And the fact that I have the Columbus, Ohio connection. I don't know if you saw that trailer. So it's just like, oh, my God, what are the chances of all of this happening at once?
Right.
And, it's perfect for the movie. The problem is I need to be able to tell people all of those connections, and it's really hard to get in this sea of content. Yeah. Any publicity for what you're doing. As we were talking about before the show started, it's what you share doesn't always get shared. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's funny how that world works. Some videos get 1 million views. The best ones get 500. And you're like, come on, man. Why are my
that's
friends...
That's like Brian's Facebook posts.
Right, that's what I was saying. Of course, exact same thing. How those algorithms work, I don't know, but I probably am going to have to buckle down and just hire a publicist and go that route. It's just a lot of money, dude. It's a lot of money.
We should chat about this at some point.
I was going to say, isn't this fortuitous?
Uh-huh.
Right. Talking about? I thought we were talking about this. What am I talking about?
I am a publicist.
No, you aren't. What?
Yeah. This is where it gets crazy.
Not officially. I do PR in motorsports, and I was a publicist for Big Red Camaro.
Are you out of here? That's crazy.
I know it is.
Okay,
it's crazy. That's how I get to be on podcasts like this.
Oh, okay. Well, can you pretend these other guys aren't here for a few seconds? And
we'll go talk amongst ourselves.
Like normal. Just be like normal, sis.
Let me also real quick before we jump to anything else. I just wanted to we finally finalized this, and it's one of the coolest ideas I've heard. I know an owner of a couple movie theaters in Houston, and he owns a drive-in, and he said, "I think it'd be the coolest thing for you and Mayor Goldie Wilson to come out, and we have a Q&A where you talk to the cars at the drive-in after seeing your movie." And I'm like, that's a cool visual, man. That's really awesome. So I got a camera crew coming out. We're going to, like, with drones and everything, and shoot this. They're doing a double feature of Back to the Future and Fastest DeLorean, and then a Q&A.
Oh, cool.
How cool is that? Awesome. I think that's going to be an awesome visual, if anything. And as I was telling you before, I have now have to work on making a fuckless version of the documentary. because apparently drive-ins are far more family-friendly than most movie theaters. And I certainly say that word a lot in the movie. In fact, my only bad review on Amazon is from a guy upset because I said that word so much. And I'm like, dude.
I read that.
I saw that too.
Those scenes might be some of the most stressful moments of my life. Mm. You know, like when I'm putting that car on the truck, guys.
Oh, yeah.
We all knew, you know, the people watching the movie knows that the car gets there. I didn't know the car was going to get there. That was a week of my life where I thought I gave my car away.
Right.
It was the most stressful thing I've ever done. And then the guy almost breaks the car, moving it up. I'm like, this is a goddamn travesty. Like, this is so awful. So, yeah, I said fuck a few times.
Yeah.
Screw that guy. I'm still upset about that review.
I was kind of wondering in the documentary, when I see that truck pull up, I kept thinking, where the hell did you find this guy?
Yeah. That's sketchy looking dude in a ratty looking truck.
What happens whenever you do shipping of any sort is they literally broker out. They put a call out to all the trucks going that way, and somebody puts a bid in, and it goes back and forth. And you know, you have little, you say, I need it covered, I need this and this, and then they tell you, here are all the people, and then they go, here's your car. That's all I had. That's all the information I had. But I do want to put a nice plug in for that guy. I did it on the way back. I went to a completely different broker, a completely different thing, and the exact
same guy
happened to be coming back.
Which was awesome.
And I couldn't I wanted to put this in the movie. It was just so much that was going on at that time. I was right in the middle of the big lie, so I couldn't really make it funny. But I had to say, he was the most professional, always answered his cell phone, got the truck there. He was such a good driver. I went with him again. His car looks like a piece of shit, but you know what? He did a good job. So you can't always, you know, judge a book by its cover. But yeah, it's scary.
Is this one of those things where you jump on like uship.com and you get a quote for $500 to move the car,
well,
and they pay the guy
$1,725 or something like that. I went through Montway Transport. I think that's the biggest broker. But it really is the luck of the draw when you're in. I mean, it goes from every state to every state. It's any city to any city. So there's hundreds, if not thousands, of trucks that could be going one way or the other. Right. You could hire a personal truck to do it, but it'll cost you $5,000. You know, you want to try to find, you know, a fleet that is going one way. And that's how you can do it for less.
Well, comparing your driver to the driver that hauled my Rambler from Northern California to Indiana, you got a gem.
Oh, see? Why is that? Was he non-responsive or something?
Well, I don't know if he knew how to speak.
I had to put subtitles in my guy, and he was apparently speaking English. And he told me he got 2 freaking tickets for his truck being too long when I walked up to him. Like, what? Thanks for telling me that.
Yeah, that was a little random. No, this guy was just, he weighed about 400, 500 pounds, and was a mouth breathing, toothless. I don't know. I was very nervous.
Did your car get to the location it needed to?
It did. I was hauling 3 cars.
Oh, see?
It did. But my Porsche had a big dent in the hood.
Whoa.
And I mean, the Rambler was a project at that point, so I don't know if he did anything to it. I really didn't pay that close attention. And then another friend's car, we got a better deal because we hauled 3 cars.
Yeah, well, I mean, did what happens with when you get the hole in the Porsche hood?
That was a big scam. The guy showed up early before we got there and insisted on unloading without us there to sign off on it. So I just had to take it.
That's
rough. Yeah, it is, but whatever.
Yeah. Okay. You have a worse story. You win, Susie.
No, I wasn't looking to win, but when I saw the truck, and you know, you were talking about it, I thought, oh God, I've been there, I've done that, and it was pouring rain.
Yeah, and the black cat in my car. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah,
that was funny.
Was telling me it's not gonna be a good venture.
Does it rain in Southern California? The day that it rains like crazy is the day you're loading the car.
It's like never. I know, it just had that feeling. But I mean, once I'd already paid the money, you know, I'd already bought, you know, $8,000 worth of parts. So it was like, well, here we go. Let's. Oh, and then the other kick in the ass was that there was really nothing wrong with the car.
Yeah, that,
I mean, that killed me.
When I was watching it, I saw that. I thought, oh my God, just get new wiring and put it back together.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, believe me, I sat there first. It was a big moment. That was actually another. Yeah. That's the problem with documentaries is you have to cut shit out because I'm a big pacing nerd. I want it to be fast. I want you to stay. But that could have been a whole week or a whole half hour because, man, I really considered it at that point. However, you saw his reaction, which was, I'm really glad we're doing this, which played on me. You know, like I still really wanted to tell the story of my brother, who I don't really know well, and spotlight what he does. You know, my whole life is spotlighting me. I'm sick of me. I was excited about actually focusing on someone else. And I knew he really wanted to do it. And I really wanted to work with him. And I just really wanted that to happen. But yeah, had it just been me and he was anybody else, that car would have been coming the fuck home. No doubt. Welcome to another. You know, those are how those car stories go. But, you know, talking to you guys, I'm realizing that most car stories go that way. I got to ask, how come most car things I see on TV are fake drama bullshit? Oh. What am I missing?
Well this just hit it right on the head.
I don't think any of us even watch TV, do those shows on TV, do we?
No.
I know I don't.
No. They're all so bad. They're all, it's funny. Brian said this to me, this car has to be done by Thursday. Like, that's the whole drama of the show. And it's like, that's not the drama of cars. That's stupid. Like, you're making up drama.
And I will tell you from the inside, okay, aside from the project that Brad just worked on for 24 hours plus, for the most part, you see any of that stuff on TV and it's this, we're going to build this car in 3 weeks. That's total BS.
Because so bad.
We all know, and I know from the design side, I'm called in months in advance. I've got the drawings done. I've got all the stuff figured out. Then it has to go through all the production stuff. Then the build starts and they condense the whole thing down in editing. And it's always funny to me that in a 22-minute show, it's 13 and a half minutes of wrenches being thrown, people on mean phone calls, chairs being kicked, things like that. And then the remainder is maybe 20% the car build and 80% the reveal.
Yeah.
Right.
In the case of your documentary, the whole thing was literally, there was drama that was just brewing, and it was funny and I don't mean funny, haha. I mean, it was horrifying for me to watch this because I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Watching this slowly build and churn, and it's happening under the surface, and just watching you, and you almost age in about 25 minutes of that documentary. I'm watching it.
Wait till you see my beard when the fire happens. It's like gray and down to my nuts. Like, it was, I was so.
Father time. Mean,
because, and I left out, I had to make that as a choice as a filmmaker. I left out all the work stuff, right? What's missing in that whole run is that I'm balancing all the gigs I have with, do I try to keep getting this record? And I would shelve it. And I'd say, this is stupid, Adam. You got to feed your kids. You got to pay your bills. And then I would watch that fucking stall, you know, that very first stall at the, and the guy's making fun of me. And I just kept going, that's golden. That is the most golden movie moment I've ever seen organically. Because it was so embarrassing. It was the moment that I couldn't shield Kenny anymore. That was the actual final moment. Because I could shield him through everything as long as Ray just ran the race and got the record. Or as long as I wouldn't have to show any of the problems with the car. Nobody would ever know. And then I'm filming it come to the starting line and it stalls and won't start. And that was it. That was the moment where the whole thing crumbled. I had to tell the truth. And these guys are saying, well, maybe it's your flux capacitor that's broken. Pwah-ha-ha. You know, it was just such a, and so I just kept coming back and kept coming back. But yeah, trying to make all those gigs, good Lord, it's so stressful. But yeah, that's real drama. That's actual drama, you know?
Yeah. And there is plenty of real drama that happens around these TV shows. Because trust me, I mean, I lived it last year building this car for SEMA, there was tons of drama.
Right.
We pulled the motor twice in 10 hours because it wouldn't start.
Why was that?
Oh, yeah, why was that?
Wait, that was out loud.
That was so painful. You're going to make me admit it?
Oh, yeah. Fess up.
There was painter's tape on the import.
You didn't take it off before you put the... that's funny.
I was going to...
It was funny to some of
us. It's funny now.
yeah, exactly. But, you know, I mean, truth be told, it's how many months later, you guys? I've driven the car 91 miles. It's been up on jack stands. And the only reason why I drove it that many miles is because Hot Rod Magazine came out to shoot it. If that, it would still be on jack stands.
Why? Is there still other issues?
Yeah. We built this car... my husband and I built this car ourselves in our garage. And for the final push, we had to get it out to California to the shop where it was going to be painted and then put back together. And I had to trust in a couple of people who had the best of intentions, but maybe aren't so good under pressure. And right. So there was just dumb shit that got not done. And some of it has to do with rushing, and some of it has to do with not reading the instruction.
Right. Yeah. No. So, the whole idea of experts.
And Adam, you've got to know. I mean, they built this Rambler in their two-car garage, right?
Yeah.
And they did everything, even the interior. Susie stitched the interior. Susie did the wiring, and everything. The only thing that left the garage for was paint. Correct.
Yeah, paint, and the actual flares themselves were fabricated off-site.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, of course,
the one thing that you left it to somebody else gets rushed and fucked up.
Well, you know, it was dumb stuff. Like, all the wiring was done, and I pulled everything off the harness and put it into plugs, and some of it wasn't plugged in.
Oh,
The shifter has a fourth gear lockout on it. It's an automatic transmission with a ratchet shifter, and it has a fourth gear lockout that's just a pin that pops in with a little C-clip.
Yeah.
And no one ever pulled the pin, so I didn't have fourth gear. you know, and we pulled the transmission three times, and twice was for stuff that we wouldn't have had to do. You know, it's just stuff like that.
Well, and go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when I pulled the dash this last weekend, I didn't unplug the battery and I let the ignition fall out of the whole thing and it hit the throttle cable and burned the throttle cable off.
And you have a background in this.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I am starting to realize that maybe the stuff I'm going through is universal and not necessarily.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
you're not alone.
No, yes. You're not alone.
I would say
your situation was particularly painful, but you are definitely not alone.
I think it's more painful because at no time did I ever consider doing these things myself. I'm a good problem solver, right? Like I've actually. I built a house and did the electric and the piping all from YouTube and that kind of stuff. So I can do it, but my head was already pretty full with the business side of things and the documenting side of things and all the other shit that I do. So to have this in my lap on top of that, and I have a family and kids that I love and I'd rather spend time with them than anybody, right? So good luck balancing all of it.
The fact that you bought tuning software is quite truthfully, that's more than I would do.
It felt like it was better, that's one of the best things I've ever done, to be perfectly honest, because you know how much stuff I can log, you know how many things I can see now that I don't have to pay somebody to do.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. I just don't know that I have the brain power. I carry a screwdriver, that's why I have a carburetor.
That's pretty funny. No, I mean, that's the one thing I couldn't have. That's the best thing I ever did, because now I can look at all of that stuff and try to piece it together. And the other problem is I can't take this car to anybody. There's not a mechanic I know. Maybe you guys know some people in the area, but I don't know anyone who, when you tell them it's a DeLorean with an LS3 motor in it, they just their eyes glaze over. And they're like, I'm not touching it. And then of course, you come up with a time machine, and they're like, dude, I can't take the risk. There's just no way I'm working on this car. And they're right. It's worth too much. I get it. If you fuck something up, we're talking about a museum piece, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? What if you offer to let them work on it for 6 months, and then you take them back to the week before they started?
Yeah. Here's the deal.
I'm done.
No, it's a time machine, dude. It's no problem. You just have to believe me. That's awesome.
That's how I'm going to do this and get to my gig on Saturday.
Yeah. Every time I tell people how stressful it is to get gigs, that's the next joke. What do you mean? You have a time machine.
That's going to be the worst, though. Your mechanic's going to lose, he's going to lose out. His wife's going to be angry. She's gonna be like, we were going to go to the Twin Pines Mall this weekend. What do you mean we're going to the Lone Pines Mall? You're like, well.
What? Oh, that was a reach, Brian. That was.
I had nothing. I'll admit it.
Yeah, but I got it. I'll give you that. At least somebody here got that.
I was trying so hard to do an alternate timeline joke in there, and I'm just gonna shut up and go over in the corner.
And can everybody at least admit that they loved Ray and thought he was the nicest person they ever saw?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I at the time we didn't realize it, or I didn't really think about it, but looking back, that guy were complete strangers. Had no idea who he was.
I was astounded.
He got in a plane, he slept on my couch, and we made that shit happen, dude. I'm so proud of that dude. I can't even tell you.
But that's a car guy for you. I mean,
yep.
Yeah.
That's what makes this community so different from anything else on Earth.
Well, the hot rod community. I've already told you my issues with the DeLorean community. So I am finding out those are two different things. The DeLorean community hates me. Wants nothing to do with me. It's all crickets if I mention the movie. They didn't like me because I ruined their car with a Back to the Future modification. Now I took the blessed motor out. You know, like Lord DeLorean would be angry with me, that kind of shit. They hold the original stock DeLorean in such high regard.
The blessed 130 horse Renault V6.
Yeah, I
thought it was a Volvo.
It's a Peugeot Renault Volvo comp. PRV. Oh,
that sounds so depressing.
It's the big three of turds. That's what it is.
The three stooges got together and built a motor.
Oh, come on. DeLorean was part of the GTO thing, right? Wasn't he?
Yes. He invented that.
See, so he would love this. Guy. He would love it. He would have loved this car. He wouldn't have picked on you and gone, man, I wish we'd have had the LS back when I put this thing together.
Exactly. And that's the argument I always make, is that it was the DeLorean Motor Company, and they hadn't even been able to make their own motor yet. He was the GTO guy. Clearly, this was the, let's just put anything in there to get the car off the line. Had they been in business for a couple more years, that would not have been the motor. So I'm stunned that the community is so, feel like I blaspheme it, because I wanted, more than, first of all, 98 horsepower at the wheels for an automatic. Think about that. Like, that's almost dangerous. There were moments in the car where, you got all these people taking pictures of you and you can't get out of, like when you're a police car and everybody kind of goes all around you, that's what it feels like. You have a ring around you of traffic when you drive that car. And at 98 horsepower, I couldn't do anything. I was stuck. Dangerous. It was actually dangerous. So it was nice to have a little more horsepower.
The protesters blocking traffic were laughing at you. Yeah, I guess it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I tell you guys this story? When I go to SEMA and I get these awards, and I get all these articles and magazines, and I meet people like the Round 6 podcast, and all this great stuff happens, right? I go up with Sony and I got a Gran Turismo award. And turns out there's a Rambler reunion that weekend in Las Vegas. So... I'm thinking, I pull out of SEMA. I can't go race. I got an invitation to race that weekend, but I can't do it because I can't get the car out of first gear. Another transmission problem. And so I go on Facebook and I go to this Rambler reunion. I say, hey, if I bring my car there, is that a good thing? And they look at the picture of it. It's got these 8.5-inch flares, fender flares. And I said, who, you know, should I bring my car over there, or will people be offended because I put an LS and an AMC, right? And I put these huge fender flares on it. And there's 140 people registered as going to this Rambler reunion. Four people say, yeah, that'd be cool.
I was going to say, at the end, Rambler reunion. Yeah, 120 of them dropped out. The rest took up a collection and sent you a check to not show up.
Yep. That's what it feels pretty
like. Much,
clearly, we are speaking the same language, Susie. Man. Uh-huh.
And, you know what you need to do, Adam? I'm going to throw this out there. Just to go for the whole trifecta here. You already pissed off the DeLorean people.
Yeah.
What you need now, you need to piss off the van community. Just buy any 70s era van and paint it up like the Mystery Machine from Scooby-Doo.
And tow the DeLorean with it.
It happens.
It's funny. There's a guy. I can actually get Doc Brown's truck, but it needs an engine swap. And I was like, oh, fuck that. I'm not doing that again.
You should put the DeLorean engine in that.
I need a diesel engine. I need a really big, powerful engine for this truck so I can put my DeLorean in there and show up in Doc Brown's truck. That'd be awesome.
Spoken like a true hot rodder, because now you're having problems with one hot rod. Where does your brain go? Your brain immediately goes to, I need to get this truck so I can hot rod that too.
I need another hot rod.
Perfect.
Because I know I'll make the next one work.
Can't we just all have Camry motors that always start? My Camry is from 99. It always starts. It always starts.
I got to be honest with you. If you'd have bought a running LS motor as opposed to building a performance one, it would always start.
Okay.
I have the doing the LS swap on our 68 Camaro was the best thing that ever happened. There is no oil in my driveway. It always starts. It doesn't smell. It's awesome. When they run, they are awesome.
Then what do I do now?
Who has the ball fan to that?
Yeah.
I mean, the obvious choice is you're financially deep into that motor. If you can get that, the engine you've got to run, you're at that point. So right now, it's a matter of kind of Doc Watsoning the thing and trying to figure out, you know, what the gremlin is that's making it not work.
Yeah.
Obviously, if money were no option.
You're so far into it, you need to stick with it.
Yeah, you're past the tipping point. I mean, had it been early on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Had it been early on, I would definitely say, you know, money were no object. It was just a case of, hey, I've got this motor. A guy wants to buy this for, you know, a slight loss to me, big deal. Then you go out, you buy a Wrecking Yard 5.3, throw that in there, do some quick tuning on it. You've got something that's super fun to drive, super reliable. But I mean, you're at that point now where, okay, you've got this high-powered beast with a lot of potential, but it's just not at that point. I got to put this like in family terms, and I've been there. This is like having the kid that's just having a hard time learning to read. You've got to break that little hurdle. I mean, you got so much invested. It'd be nice to take that kid and throw him out and replace him with you. I had thought about doing that a couple times.
We can't all do what you did, Brian. Right. right. No, I see what you're saying. And to tell you the truth, every time I drive it, I think I'm a little bit closer to figuring stuff out. Like I forgot the fuel pressure regulator, the spring inside of it broke. Just fucking broke. I don't know why it broke. But I took it apart. I noticed it was cracked in half. I'm like, well, that couldn't have been a good thing. So I fixed that. And then when I put it back together, I forgot to put the vacuum line in. Well, I drove it and it never stalled. And I noticed it wasn't stalling, and I couldn't get it to stall. I'm like, well, that's interesting. So I'm starting to think that shitty Chinese intake manifold, for whatever reason, is not working the way it should with the rest of the system. So, you know, maybe that was a knockoff of a Holley.
This isn't my line. This is stealing one from Jeremy Clarkson. But it looks like someone described over the telephone what a Holley intake looked like to someone in another country who didn't understand the language.
Did the box say Harry?
Sorry. Yeah, it was absolutely a Chinese knockoff. That's funny.
Like the logo that's on it looks just like the girl at Starbucks kanji tattoo on her.
Sorry, intake. Wow. Yeah, this is not going to the PC police, but that made me laugh a lot. Good job. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, so that I feel like slowly and but surely we're close. You know, it just feels like we're so close.
And you probably are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, having built a couple of hot rods, it's just the process. You know, I've never put together a car that I fired it up, you know, even the first time it fired, and then you just jump in and you drive it cross country. I mean, it's like you drive it two blocks and something breaks and you're just like, shit. So, you know, you figure it out. I mean, it's, I built a Model A years ago, and I mean, it was 3 months of every night after work fixing stuff over and over and over and over and over. And it did become a very reliable car. It was fast too. It was a lot of fun. But I'll tell you, there are times I was just ready to just, you know, I mean, just give up.
Well, and the other issue with me is that I'm always scared to take it out if I'm not going to an event, because it feels like there's a limited number of times I can do this before it breaks. So it better be something I'm getting $1,000 for. So
you've got to get beyond that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that becomes very difficult if you
I mean, reliability wise, you've got
to
get.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But in order to do that, I got to drive it more. I got to test it more. But am I going to test it right now when I have 3 gigs this weekend? No, I'm not. Nope. I'm just gonna, you know, tinker. And then, oh, I got 4 days off. Ooh, maybe I should test it more now. But, well, I got somebody's wedding coming up, and they're a really sweet couple, and they really want to drive into their reception with this car. I mean, it almost feels like I try to buy another car, use that for work, and then work on this, which completely defeats the goddamn purpose anyway. So it is. That's why this is such a weird issue, is that you don't want to drive. It's weird. You have this hobby car that you think is a hobby car, but you don't want to drive it because you're scared that you're going to break something in the middle of it, and it's going to be down for so many days, you know?
Right. No, and, you know, I think all of us understand that, too. But none of us, our livelihood, you know, feeding our children don't depend on that.
Right.
If I get pissed off, I can leave the car in the garage for a month before I, you know, think about it again. And you don't have that situation.
Yeah, well, I got sponsors waiting on me, and I missed the first race, so.
Yeah.
I do, as horrible as it would be to see Child Protective Services come down on you, I would love to see, like, an outtake version where you literally have it at the point where you spent all of your time and money testing this car, and at one point your kids are eating sandwiches that are just, instead of having meat, they're loaded with, like, time slips.
Yep. Then you get that bologna, that, boy. That's spoken from a true gearhead right there.
They open their lunchbox at school, and it's just filled with drag time slips.
It is cute that my
and
children...
a quarter to 10:30.
Considering my artistic background and all the singing, dancing, and acting I've done in my life, my son came up to me and he said, "When I grow up, I want to be a dad just like you and work on cars all the time."
Like, see, Miles, that's a compliment.
How did that happen? That is the furthest thing from anything I am, but all he thinks I do is work on the time machine. It's like, okay, yeah, you look at your hands, you go, yep, I used to play piano with these hands. And now we look like, so it is what it is, man. But you know, it's hard, honest work. I think that's what I love about it, is that it's all problem solving. And that is the key to almost, you know, editing is problem solving, playing music is problem solving. All of it's the same thing. It's just in a different
area. And I can't stress enough, now that you're doing it yourself, how gratifying it will be when you finally get it right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know, we pulled into SEMA and I was petrified. We're little garage builders who live in Tennessee. And I was petrified until the first person, because SEMA is the.
Right. But you'd already gotten in. You were there. What was going to happen next? Oh, well, you were judged at SEMA.
Oh, you were judged by the world. It's the largest automotive trade show. And we are home garage builders. We don't do this for a living. We do it for a hobby. I don't know what I'm going to be judged against. I knew that I had a Ring Brothers Camaro on one side of me and I don't remember what was across the way. But anyway, you know, so it's petrifying. But once you, it's that original thumbs up, that first thumbs up you get, and it's like, okay, I can breathe now.
Yeah.
So, and yeah. I feel good. I feel good about what I did. I don't feel like, you know, I'm showing up to the gun show with a knife.
But in my, right, in my brain, though, that is the way I feel if, you know, when I screen the movie. Like, that's right. My Jones, right? Like, I'm holding my breath, hoping they take an emotional ride. Like, that's the whole point of storytelling, right? You want the audience, you want to have communicated with you, with them enough that they feel the same things you felt, or that you want them to feel. And that's why I do, when I first talked to Brian, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, because it was the first pretty unsolicited review or somebody just saying, dude, I felt all of this. I felt every single thing you went through. Oh my God. That's that same thing you're describing, Susie, is exactly what you feel like as a filmmaker, because you don't know if anything's any good until somebody else watches it.
Here's my thing on this. And the reason I felt so compelled to reach out to you, though, was, okay, you've got the kind of car, and, you know, all of us being really entrenched in the car community. I mean, Brad's in there. Brad's made a great name for himself as far as his striping and his lettering and his Streamliner project and a million other things he's doing. You got Eric, who's built tons and tons of cars. He's totally entrenched in this. Alex has more history building cars and fun stuff, and he's a brilliant man and has a great job on that side.
Technical knowledge.
And you got Susie, who's done all this stuff. We know that the elitists in the hot rod community would kind of look at a time travel DeLorean and go, oh, really? Great. Another movie car.
Right.
Here's where yours stands out. Yours is literally, it is like, you look at it, you go, okay, cool. Everybody loves Back to the Future to begin with. You top that with, this car's got an LS engine swap. So I was hooked already. I was going, holy shit, this is way cool. I was like, now I'm like, okay, now wait, this is a guy who's not really a gearhead who's going to try this. So I'm like, okay, right. He's got my respect. Then as the thing goes on and I'm watching you persevere and not kick somebody's face in, I'm going, right. Now I can get behind this guy. He's got some good character. And at the moment that car yanked that front wheel off the ground.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I was like, hero status. The guy's
yeah, it doesn't matter how fast it went.
Is that really that's really the moment for you guys, huh? I didn't even think of that as other than scaring my ass off. You know,
I caught it the instant it happened. I said, I think I just saw daylight under that left front tire. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that the video would show it again. I'm like, man, right. I think the thing caught air.
Yeah.
Boy, that's huge, man.
And you know, it's funny. I'm bummed I took the hood off, because the hood was only 80 pounds. The reason that went up was because of that one 50-pound battery I took out of the front. That's the only reason that happened, and it would have happened if I had had that back on just as much, if not more, actually. So I still could have done it as a time machine, but no, that was an awesome moment, and it is kind of cool. The inside shot shows all the stuff move up and slam down, which was just a cool thing, a cool shot to get as a photographer. You're like, oh, that's awesome.
Well, I also noticed that you actually, just for a split second, it just caught you. I could tell, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. What the hell's happening? I could see it in your eyes.
My eyes widened. Yeah, no, you can totally see it. My eyes widened. And what's funny is that, you know, they were asking if I let off on it a little bit. And I was like, I didn't, but gravity, I wasn't ready. It was harder to hit the clutch because, you know what I mean? Like, all of your gravity is different when you're facing a different way when you're pushing the pedals. So, but I stuck it. I held in there, you know. And the other thing is, when the time circuits flew off the dash, that was one of the hardest things to go through. Those are like $3,000 parts that are only made in France, and they just slammed off. And I had to try not to have my eyes go down there and see if anything was wrong and keep going, you know. What a weird car to try to drag race.
Man.
But you did.
I did it. I did do it. And I do actually, it doesn't feel like me. When I watch the last scene, I get so excited for that guy. I just can tell when the shot where I see my cousin in the distance and he's holding his hand up and I don't know what's going on. There's that look in my eyes of like 95 things are going through my head. And I'm like, what did I get? And I just, it isn't me anymore. It isn't out. It is a completely out of body experience. And it is it's such a pure moment of joy. It was just, that was the cool thing, is because it wouldn't have been that, if all that shit with my brother hadn't happened and all the problems hadn't happened, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. You know what I mean? Like, if we had just gotten the record to build it and that was it, who cares? It was only a good moment because all the awful shit happened. So.
And of all the times for the person to not be in the ticket booth.
Right. You know? And then
it's like, Don, my God, it's like, no, he's going to run this run and he's not going to have a time slip to back it
and
up.
Then Don,
I'm like, no.
Don's fucking blind ass couldn't read the number. He's so full of shit. There was a pole in his way. He couldn't see it. His eyes can't see a quarter mile. I'm giving him so much shit about that, dude. You got it. We have a video podcast where we sit at the bar and just talk about shit.
Right on.
And it's funny because Don still tries to always be Mayor Goldie Wilson and like try to be proper. And it makes me crazy because I'm the most improper. I don't care. I don't have to worry about being PG. And it's so funny watching us try to discuss things that we might have talked about off camera. And then when it's on camera, he's like, well, here's how I, and I'm like, you're lying, you asshole. What the fuck are you doing? Why? You know, so there's this complete back and forth because, you know, the whole time. So it's dude, as far as I'm concerned, he saved the documentary. He added a glue to it that without somebody being there to piece it together and ask the questions that the audience were probably asking, that saved everything to me. Because before he was involved in it, you know, I was like, there's no way for me to tell the story because it looks like I'm manipulating everything. You know what I mean? Like, it just looked like I was doing a bunch of voiceovers and I slammed my brother. And I said, Don, you got to help me out. Let's tell the story together because otherwise this doesn't work. I've always had a thing for, you know, the people that you thought were one hit wonders that aren't, you know what I mean? Like, we see all these people in movies and you don't see them again. And it isn't because they weren't good. It's because life happens and their stories are always 1,000 times more interesting than the ones that made it easily. And he goes all over the world because he's Mayor Goldie Wilson, which was something he brought 30 years ago for a week, you know, like it was just something he did 30 years ago. And that's what people liked. But he's got a huge body of work. He's been a voiceover actor this whole time. He does all sorts of cool stuff. And I was just so happy to show that side of him because people don't know that. You know, people just think, oh, that loser was only in one thing and then he moved on. It's like, no. Hollywood is filled with these incredibly affable, funny, awesome people that life just had other plans. Well, if any of you are ever in Los Angeles, you must come come to the Golf Con Bar, play some mini golf, and have a drink.
Hell yes! And I have to ask you a question. With your bar being in the backyard like that, do you store all of your alcohol? You don't have to answer this on thing. Is it all stored outside, and how do you keep it from not going kind of funky with temperature changes?
Well, first of all, I'm in LA and it doesn't ever really change temperature too often. The answer is yes, but I also am not good at keeping it stocked. And that's the truth of the matter. I can't. Usually what ends up happening is if somebody comes by, they might bring a bottle of something or whatever, and then it's gone in a couple of days and I don't really think about it again.
Gotcha.
I'm not the type of drinker that needs to have it at all times. Cause if it's around, I'll drink it. It's like food. You know, if you keep a bunch of shit food around, I'm just going to eat it all. So,
well, and now that you've got a hot rod, you don't have to worry about having food ever again. So that's.
Yeah, pretty much how it feels. Pretty much.
So we haven't really discussed yet, and we need to, because anybody who wants to see the video, where do they find it?
Amazon Prime, or Amazon, actually. It's on Amazon now. It's going
and
to Google
currently, Play. If you're a Prime member, it's free, correct?
Yes, it is free if you're with Prime. I do have to ask if you guys could rate and review it. Apparently,
that's what I'm working on for you now.
I didn't understand. Basically, in order for anybody to see it that isn't looking for it, it has to be rated and reviewed a lot. I don't even think it matters what you get. It just has to be rated and reviewed.
Oh, to push it up? Okay.
Yeah, because right now, if you go to documentaries, it's not there.
You've got to look for it. You got to go in and search for DeLorean,
which is
that's what I did.
Yeah, but that's awful. Like that's I can't it's frustrating because I do actually think people that don't care about Cars or DeLorean, I still think they'll like the movie. I think it's got a, it has a, the it's got enough emotion in it that it doesn't even matter if you know anything about Cars. But it's impossible.
I agree, but I also think that car guys aren't necessarily going to look for it because it's DeLorean, right. And they should because it's a true car story. I mean,
yeah, no, yeah, but
the pain and the anguish.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I guess car magazines and you know that's the route I can go. I really didn't think about the car community because of how poorly I was treated in the DeLorean community. In my head, that was all the same. And I guess I guess this isn't going to have that push. I guess I'll think about the Back to the Future fans and the Ready Player One fans. But listening to you guys, clearly that isn't true. And that's exciting because I think if the car community embraces it, it's going to make everything else go a lot easier.
Yeah, I think the car community will take it on just fine.
Awesome. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime, rate and review, please, please, please. And
they'll see it for free because we're all Amazon Prime members because that's how we get our car parts.
We'll get on there. We'll get this thing reviewed for you, and we'll try to push this out to as many people as we can on our side. And Brad, if you're still with us, man, let's get you and Adam hooked up. You guys are right down the road from one another.
Oh, really?
Hey, cool. Adam, where are you?
North Hollywood.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. I thought you were a little closer. Apparently, Brian misunderstood you.
Oh, I misunderstand everything.
Where is Brad?
I'm in a high desert. I'm in Hesperia.
Oh well, that's not the furthest thing away.
No, it's not like ridiculously far. Yeah. No.
It's not.
Where
like
did
Susie
you think I was at, Brian? I told you I was 10 minutes from the Ready Player One red carpet. Where did you think that was?
I live in Arizona. You say California, everything to me is Universal Studios.
Everything's LA.
Yeah, just the term LA. It's like, what does that mean? Where are you?
Well, LA, see, LA goes from Mexico up to San Jose, and then coast to Arizona, right? So that's LA.
No. You don't group San Diego into LA.
Not even.
Where are you? So LA North is all Northern California to me.
To whom?
Oh, that's going to start a fight and a half. Well, you don't say LA and San Francisco in the same. Oh, no.
you don't say LA and Orange County.
Have you ever seen that? Well, I thank you guys. This has been awesome. A lot of information. I guess I need to get an aftermarket ECU.
Maybe do something with that intake. That might be, I got to say, ECU most likely intake just seems to be a big part of the problem, especially with leaking and everything like that. Right. And, you don't know what that thing's made of. That could be, I'd be surprised if any of the runners are even,
it's high quality aluminum.
Right.
Aluminum.
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to bust through, get this thing edited. I know. We're gonna try to wrap it up. I'd like to have you back. I'd like if we do like a 10-minute, 20-minute thing at some point where we just touch base with you and keep an update going.
Okay.
If you'd be up for that, I would love to do that.
Totally. Jesus, your setups for your jokes are really bad, Brian. Like you go to a place and it's you do these softballs and there's no hit. It's actually a very endearing quality, I gotta say.
This is the fun part about doing these things. This is what I live for.
There's so much conviction in your setup, and then it's just a whiff every time.
I live for this stuff, man. It's like I prefer to be like the anti-dad joke.
Mine was like, these aren't dad jokes. These are utter disappointment jokes. You gotta rename them. What do you do? You do stepdad jokes.
A swing and a miss.
Okay, well, cool. I'm glad that was as a surprise to you as everybody else to me, because I just, that was, I even watching it again, every time that happens, my eyes glaze over and I want to throw something at the TV. I just can't believe what's happening. And as it's happening, and it just turned, it was like a different human. And thank God it was text and not a phone call, or nobody would have ever believed me.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So. Cool. All right.
You know, there was another thing about the documentary. I have to say this. As the credits are rolling and the song is playing, I'm humming along to the song, and then I see the credits roll up and realize that you wrote and composed and sang every song in the documentary.
Yeah.
Amazing job, man. They were all good.
Thank you.
Right. I mean, I didn't realize that.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I didn't either. Now I have to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, I literally did.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, great. And speaking of softballs, too, I'll throw this one in there. Yeah, if you play all of the songs backwards, you can hear.
You get your DeLorean back.
if you play it backwards, it fixes the power dip. It's amazing. I heard it play. That's the problem. But, yeah, and I, honestly, that wasn't even an ego thing. Almost all of those were temporary tracks that I just watched so often, I just kind of got used to them, and I didn't have time to, like, properly score it or even send it out, you know. I did license one song, that Celtic song in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. I just loved it. I just thought it looked awesome. And the snow coming down, that was really cool. Yeah. Just a nice shot. But, yeah, no, I'm a musician. That's what I was always supposed to do. Singer, wow. Songwriter, musician, those were the kind of things that I came out here for. Ended up working on a car. So,
yeah, I really liked the last song in it. I was humming along to that thing, and I'm kind of like, this is catchy. I like this. And I see the credit, and I'm like, wow, yeah. Very nice.
Well, thank you. And I want everybody to know, other than the song credits, I didn't put my credit. I didn't credit myself on anything because it was just too embarrassing. Because I literally did it all, not just because I didn't have anybody else to do it, and I was just trying to get shit done. Like, I mean, all the way down to almost all the camera work and the setup and the production and the direction. And it was just like, it was just such a fun job. So,
well, we know where you spent all your money.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine what it would have cost if I had tried to really produce that. Good God. Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you.
Awesome.
Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you. And hey, we look forward to seeing you. I will, when this goes up online in the show notes, we will have links to the website, the documentary, everything else you guys need. And again, I can't say thanks enough, Adam, for taking your time, being here with us, sharing more of the story. And we really look forward to, again, doing some updates on this, keeping people abreast of what's going on with the car and letting them know where they can see it, where they can book the car. Everything cool. Like that.
And I'll, if you can make one note that if anybody has any interest in not having everything spoiled before they listen to the podcast, might be worth a play. Cause I'm just realizing now we just destroyed that movie.
So yeah, I will definitely I'll put a spoiler alert right at the beginning.
Yeah, just say, listen, if you have any interest, maybe watch it first. It'll make a little more sense because I just thought about it. I just gave away the fake dino and gave away like me getting the record and like it's everything that is exciting about the movie. So oops, bad salesman.
No, we'll make this good. We'll find a way to spin this whole thing.
Yeah, I think we can.
All right, man.
I can clickbait the hell out of this. I will be like, hey. Round 6 podcast guest picks on Brian. Brian cries. What made it happen? Click here. Done. This is going to be perfect.
And dick, shitty. And if you throw all that in there, it'll get shared 9,000 times.
Well done.
Nice.
Well, awesome, sir. You have a great night. And again, congratulations on what is a fabulous documentary. And, man, I'm looking forward to seeing this thing become a total success for you.
All right, man. Thank you.
For sure.
Thank you, everybody.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you. Have a great night. Thanks again for listening. And be sure to keep up with us gearheads over on our website at www.round6pod.com. And if you'd like to, be sure to follow along with us over on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Subscribers to our e-newsletter have access to expanded content such as tutorials, uncut interviews, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes footage. It costs nothing to subscribe, and you can do so over on our website at www.round6pod.com.